south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
You know how I love to talk about gringos who found strange business niches here in Latin America and are doing just fine? Well, the other day, I was walking way off the gringo tourist trail, as usual, in a real big and busy Latin American city, kind of an upscale area, lots of casinos and stuff, very few junk cars, lots of nice ones. By the way, that's a good sign that the area is pretty safe. Nice cars and casinos, that means good security. Now, I wasn't exactly on the main drag, which is right on the ocean. It was a couple of blocks off of it, into a slightly residential and business area, and suddenly I come up on this big parking lot with a really unusual sign hanging in front of it. Now, this particular parking lot was lit up like a disco. That's unusual in itself. And that means a heavy dose of throbbing Latin music. Now, I don't mind traditional Latin music. Merengue, salsa, in fact, it's pretty cool. It's part of the Latin thing, the atmosphere. It's part of being down here. Though what I can't stomach is Latin rock. Man, does that suck. It's just rehashed, pre-digested first world rock and roll with bad Spanish lyrics. They don't even translate the English lyrics into Spanish correctly. Which, once again, proves old Solomon correct when he said there's nothing new under the sun. Latin rock is bad enough, but unfortunately, what's even more vomitous than that is that real gutter trash, the mindless and talentless hip-hop and rap clone they call reggaeton. Look, if you ask me or anyone who's trained in music, they'll tell you that rap and hip-hop are an insult to real music. Then you've got these tattooed Latin ghetto fools making bad copies of crap that's not even music. But hell, it's got a monotonous beat, so women love dancing to it. And no one down here is pointing out that the lyrics are infantile, sexist, racist, not to mention violent, and everything else that's wrong with U.S. hip-hop and rap. But again, it's got the rhythm, mother's heartbeat, so girls just love dancing to it. And that's what it's all about, right? Now, where was I? Oh, yeah. So I'm near this parking lot, and I hear the music, and I see the lights flashing. It must have been around 9 o'clock at night. Figure it's just a parking lot with a disco buried deep inside of it or something. But man, was I wrong. Soon as I looked up, I saw a well-lit sign that said, get this, Mundo de Camiones de Comida. Translation, food truck world. Yeah, food truck world. I thought, what the hell? And as I walked inside the place, there was even a sign translated into English. It said, food truck world. Not that anyone there could speak English. And man, the place was busy. There were all kinds of waiters and waitresses running around in little uniforms, and an obvious light-skinned, kind of tall gringo without a uniform running twice as fast as the rest of them, going up to tables, handing out menus, taking orders, delivering food, even wiping down tables, arranging them, and picking up garbage. So naturally, nosy as I am, I walked up to the guy and said, hey, is this your place? It kind of looks like it's a gringo-wise thing. And he said, yeah. I said, quite unusual, but man, you got it down. This place is cool and it's cranking. Then I sat down and decided to have something to eat and observe. And this is what the setup was like. And of course, I did get to sit down with the guy and pick his brain. Anyway, this is how serendipity works. Get this. He told me about a year ago he noticed there were a lot of food trucks around the big cities in Latin America. And some were very nicely done and others were in pretty crap shape. And he said, as far as the food truck business in general, the owners slash drivers didn't seem very well organized. They were spread around all over the place. And like he said, food truck chaos kind of reigned supreme. Now, when I asked him about the food trucks themselves, he says you can actually go online and find food truck auctions and import them from the States just like chicken buses or cars that have been totaled up in the States. You know the drill. So these days, you do see a lot of food trucks here in Latin America. And 5 years ago, you saw almost none. Just the corner kind of handmade pushcart or hot dog stand. So anyway, the gringo running this thing was not in the food truck business previously. He knew nothing about it. In fact, he's a retired jarhead, 20 years in the military and out. He's about 47. So what's he doing in Latin America? Well, he was stationed at a U.S. embassy and learned quite quickly of the gringo advantage down here. And he knew after his embassy tours that he wanted to stay down here forever. Just as an aside here, isn't that funny? Military guys, all nationalistic and patriotic. You'd think, right? That's what they say. And why they're in the military as lifers in the first place. But some of them, the smarter ones, and it always seems to be that way, once they've had a good taste of Latin America, often if they haven't got a family or wife up in the States, they just never go back. Or if they do go back, often they'll come back as their retirement plan. Oh, and I should add here that many military attachés like this guy learned Spanish. Basically, the embassy provides classes for them. He was about 80% fluent. So if this guy, just a year or so ago, was totally ignorant about the food truck business, how'd he get in it? Well, first thing he noticed that the way these food truck owners or drivers were doing things was very inefficient. Like, for example, that normally right before people go to work, between 7 and 8 o'clock in the morning, it's balls-to-the-wall business for a food truck parked on a corner or anywhere in big city Latin America. And then nothing from 9 o'clock to noon. Then noon, it's balls-to-the-wall again. Our business is pretty decent. Till maybe 2. And then nothing. And he said, as it turns out, contrary to what you might think, when people get out of work 4, 5, 6 at night, they don't go to the food truck. They go home and eat. They don't want to spend their dough, and they just might have a nice home-cooked meal at home from the wife or grandma or whatever. And that's how it goes during the weekday. But on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night, depends if you've got a nice spot to park your truck, you could do balls-to-the-wall business because people stay out late on weekends because Latins live for the weekend. You know, you've heard me talk about that before. But, as he said, probably 3/4 of all food trucks don't have access to where the people are partying on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday night. So they kind of close up shop or open and just barely make their nut. You can imagine how that happens. Suppose you got a food truck in a nice business district. Well, on the weekends, nobody's there. Nobody's working in the food truck. Well, you might have a spot that's parked there permanently because you're paying rent or got permission from the city, whatever. But no one's buying. Because on weekends, most business and commercial districts don't have much foot traffic. And the prime spots for food trucks near beaches and parks have long since been taken. So what about permits, or can you just park your truck anywhere? Yeah, even lard-ass Latin governments make you get a permit, and they only allow a certain amount of spaces in prime locations. And remember, there's bribes to pay and cops to pay off and everything else that goes on here in Latin America. That is for the choice spots on or near the party districts or the beach sections anyway. So here's what happened. This lone gringo, the fact is he just mustered out from the jarheads and had been renting an apartment for about a year and a half in the center of a big Latin city. And every day he'd sit by the pool on his balcony and look at a number of food trucks and all the activity going on down below, around 4 floors down from where he lived. So he had a bird's eye view, or I should say, these days, what you might call a drone's eye view of all the activity around those food trucks. And he said practically every day he'd go down and get food from these guys himself. So he'd hang around and talk to these people. He spoke some Spanish. And these guys were telling him about how the food truck business was really good just a couple hours a day. And the rest of the time, they might as well pack it up and go home. And they do sometimes. Well, that got the wheels turning in this gringo's head. And then came this bright idea. He also realized that most parking lots in business districts, during the week, they'd empty it out at 5 or 6 when people got out of work and went home. And on weekends, in the business district anyway, there'd be a lot of activity till around noon. Because you see, in Latin America, most businesses will be open on Saturday to noon or 1. And then after that, everyone goes home. So he went around town looking at parking lots and empty lots. He checked them all out, even the ones that were on or near the road right on the ocean, you know, the high rent district. But he found, as you might expect, a couple of blocks inland, parking lots were empty on nights and weekends, totally underutilized, and he thought, maybe I could cut a deal with these guys. Didn't take him long, he said. He found a guy with an underutilized parking lot, a couple of blocks from the ocean in a pretty nice area. He cut a deal with the owner, who just happened to be an Israeli guy. Go figure, huh? So he signed a contract to rent the lot from 6 o'clock at night till sunrise during the week, and full days on Saturdays and Sundays. Now, this was just a bare parking lot, compressed gravel and no roof. Now, it might sound nuts, but he did make a deal to rent his place part-time like that for $2,000 a month. Then, first thing he did was call one of those tent rental companies, you know, where you rent a tent for weddings and stuff like that. And he made a deal with them to rent a good-sized tent for the month just to cover the center of the parking lot. So, if you picture the parking lot, from an aerial view, you'll see the cars park around the perimeter. In the center, it's a big sort of circus tent. All right, so now he's paying $2,000 a month rent and around $800 a month to rent this tent. Sounds like a pretty big nut, right? Well, he's not stupid. He did his homework. Before he even did any of this, he went around to all the food trucks in the city. Must have been 1,000 of them, he said. He gave him a little brochure. In that brochure, it said, look, I'm opening up a place called Food Truck World, and it'll be open at 7 o'clock at night on weekdays and Saturdays and Sundays, 24 hours. Exactly the hours, probably half the food trucks in the city were virtually idle. Which means, as he explained in the pamphlet, you can have your regular food truck business, but if you have those times free, you can come and rent a space in my Food Truck World parking lot for $50 a day. Now, I got to tell you, when I was there, I counted 20 food trucks. They were set up in a square right along the perimeter of the tent, and the people eat in the tent, which has chairs and tables set up, and the food trucks kind of are the border, the perimeter around them. Oh, and funny enough, the way it's set up, you don't go up to the food truck and order like you would normally. You sit down at one of these plastic tables, plastic chairs, and there's a stack of menus on the table, one for each of the food trucks. So, in fact, you've got 20 menus on each table. And, of course, they're not standardized at all. Some are tiny, some are pieces of paper, and some are big plastic things, but that's just the way it is. And they've got waiters and waitresses that come up to your table and take your order. Then they put the order into the food truck and deliver it to you, which is kind of weird but functional. Oh, and here's a pure gringo touch. In that deal, you pay $50 a day, cash, in advance. And here's another brilliant gringo touch. You're not allowed to sell any booze or soft drinks. He's got the concession on that. In fact, off to the side, away from the other trucks, he's got his own little food truck with beer, soft drinks, and hard liquor and stuff. And man, this guy is cleaning up. When I went there, every table was filled. Something like 30 tables. And with around 20 trucks, he's making a grand a day just from the rents for doing nothing. Plus all the dough and the beer and soft drink concessions. So I'm figuring this guy's probably hauling in $1,500 a day minimum. Oh, and by the way, when he first floated the idea and handed his pamphlets out, he told food truck owners to sign up on his email site if they wish to participate. And he said he got around 200-something responses for 20 spots. So he had the advantage to be able to pick and choose the food trucks and what they sold, obviously, in as much as he wanted big variety. He went after a little bit of everything. So, for example, he has a truck that sells Heroes, one sells Mexican food, sushi, Chinese, ice cream and yogurt, barbecue ribs, Italian food, Greek food. There's even a guy in a food truck with Italian specialties, and he makes his own pasta right there, hecho a mano. You can see it drying on racks back there. Now, naturally, with food trucks, there's going to be a lot of overlap with the food, but that doesn't matter. For me, the confusing part was, like I said, you're given 20 menus at your table, so you almost don't know where to begin. And let me tell you, when I was there at 9 at night, the variety of people eating there was across the board. There were guys from the electric company with hard hats, along with girls in high heels and disco dresses that could barely walk on the gravel. Actually, it was a very dense, compacted gravel, so it's not like you're crunching along as you walk. Remember, it is a parking lot during the day anyway. Now remember, this particular food truck world has a disco built into it, so man, they have everything. Picture it from an aerial view. The perimeter is regular parking up to the physical borders of the lot, which is fenced in. In the center, there's a big tent surrounded by food trucks. Kind of like in the movies, you know, the westerns where when there's an Indian attack, the wagons kind of instantly form a circle with the people in the center. You get the picture. Now, I don't know if anything such as this exists up in the States. Maybe it does. Maybe that's where this gringo got his idea. I don't know. But let me tell you, it's amazing when you think about the numbers this guy's doing. His overhead, he told me, is around $5,000 a month. Got to figure utilities, electric, sewage, plumbing, garbage pickup, and paying five waiters and waitresses. Of course, they're making less than minimum wage, around $200 a month each, because they're working for tips. He told me he makes his nut off the rentals and all that the first 5 days of each month. So think about it. This guy's hauling in at least 20 G's a month for himself. Probably a lot more. I'm lowballing it here. So there you have it. A kind of a quasi brick and mortar business where a gringo's basically struck it rich. And he's only been doing it for about a year. And his initial investment, he said, was around $10,000. That'd be for renting the parking lot and the tent, paying ahead for a couple of months too, and to build his and her restroom, and to rent his own little food truck to sell soda, beer, and booze. But now, after a year, he told me, he owns the tent, he bought his own food truck for his booze concession, and he's happy as a clam. At least I assumed he was, till I asked him what were the downsides of owning such a business. He said, I have to be here all the time. And he says, I have to get on these food truck owners, because sometimes, in the beginning anyway, there were days when some of these guys just wouldn't show up. And he said, I don't want any empty spaces in the caravan. So now the deal is, he says, I get a $500 deposit from these guys. And if they don't show up, I subtract it from there. And he said, if they miss 3 days in a row, he's got a long list of food truck owners that will jump right in and take that spot. So there you have it, another wild and crazy niche that got filled by a gringo. And it seems only gringos think of these things. Now, of course, you've heard me say over and over again, the easiest, fastest, and lowest overhead way to make money here is on the net, having some kind of internet thing going. But a lot of gringos just aren't internet savvy enough to get in on that kind of action. Besides, having a brick-and-mortar or quasi-brick-and-mortar business is the dream of so many gringos and expats sitting on the sofa up in Cleveland, chomping at the bit to get their plan B going. But like this gringo food truck entrepreneur says, the big downside is he's got to show up there every day. Not that he's got to be there every minute, but he has to show up or things start falling apart. And quick. Especially, he said, organizing these food truck guys and keeping them on the up and up. Because, like he said, you're dealing with 20 different guys. They've all got their own way of doing things. Not to mention they're all their own bosses. They own these food trucks, or rent them, or whatever. And there's confrontations and conflicts and egos and jealousies and jockeying for position. And remember, there's a macho thread that weaves through all of this, too. This is Latin America, you know. Then I said, well, do guys drink and get into fights here? I mean, that would seem logical, right? Especially on weekends, Latins like to party, and this place is open 24 hours. He said no, he's got the usual useless slug in a uniform with a 12-gauge shotgun that he's never fired in his life. Kind of standard issue for all businesses here in Latin America. He said the worst that happens is someone gets too drunk and they have to carry him to his car. So far, he said in a year, he's had no real trouble, except once in a while, the cops will come in, two of them on a motorcycle, and they expect to get free food, or at least a couple of free beers. But that's normal here in Latin America, he says, and they oblige. He said, hey, it's kind of like the cops in their donuts up in the States, only here it's the cops in a beer and a burger. All right, so there you have it. Another boots on the ground gringo business idea, a niche that's been filled, run by a gringo who never thought in a million years he'd be doing such a thing. Speaking of boots on the ground stories, now we have this email coming in from a gringo who just had some medical healthcare issues taken care of here in Latin America. Listen to this. As usual, I'll paraphrase, add, subtract, and throw in some stupid jokes, if you don't mind. Even if you do mind. Dear Johnny, he says, boy, can I attest to the off-the-gringo trail cost of surgery. He says, here in Oaxaca, Mexico, man, I have the hardest time with that city's name. It's spelled O-A-X-A-C-A, Oaxaca. But then again, there are lots of Mayan city and town names that are very difficult to pronounce, have no relationship to the phonetic sounding of the letters. For example, a dirty, ugly little town in Guatemala called Misco. That's M-I-X-C-O, Misco. Nope, no S in it at all, but that's how they pronounce it. Then there's another rather nice town in Guatemala, high in the Altiplano, called Xela. And you know what? There's not a single S in that word, Xela. It's X-E-L-A. How about this one? M-U-X-B-A-L, pronounced Mujbal. I'm telling you, there ain't no Muj in Mujbal. Since when is an X pronounced Uj? But to me, one of the very hardest city names to pronounce is in Honduras, Tegucigalpa. Whoa. You have to see how that one's spelled to believe it. That's why everybody just calls it Tegucig. But where were we? Oh yeah, talking about boots on the ground healthcare-wise with one of our longtime listeners. He says, Johnny, here in Oaxaca, an experienced surgeon did a routine hernia repair for me. $1,400 total. That was it. Included three visits with my local GP, all the lab tests to show that I could undergo the operation and tolerate the anesthesia, all hospital costs at a clean and efficient Catholic nun-run hospital here in the city. Yeah, I said Catholic nun-run. What a rhyme, huh? Yep, it was first world all the way. So here I am, a month later, good as new. It was inefficient, above board, and a month later, Here I am writing you about it, Johnny. However, he says, there was a fun yet tough part, or you could say embarrassing part. You see, the nuns were nurses at this hospital, and they crashed into my pre-op room with me cowering under the sheets completely naked. Casually, they tossed back the sheet and raked off my pubes with a big double blade. Nope, no shaving cream. I wish they would have told me that wasn't included in the $1,400. I would have brought my own. Hell, I'd have shaved my own pubes. You know, Johnny, in the States, an operation like that would have cost me, on average, $6,000 or more. Oh, and I have to tell you, I tried to crack a joke as the anesthesia was plowing me under on the butcher block, but my GP, who was in attendance because of my crap Spanish, told me my joke was lost in translation. Figures. I'll blame it on the dope, not my submoronic Spanish this time, I guess. All in all, I'd say a pretty damn good deal. Financially and physically, I was the clear winner. Nope, not a stitch of buyer's remorse. Even after all that, I have to smile because I know, back in the USA, if I'd had that done, I'd be taking it up the proverbial arse. Anyway, Johnny, you're on the money again, man. Best wishes from OAXACA. Man, that's hard to pronounce. Signed, Expat Bobby. All right, thanks for that, Expat Bob, but I have to tell you, I just looked it up. The average cost for a hernia repair in the U.S. is around $8,000. So if you divide that number out by your 1,400, you're right in that Latin American healthcare sweet spot. As I've mentioned many times on this show, your average cost of healthcare procedures here in Latin America, off the gringo tourist trail anyway, is between a quarter and a sixth of what you'd pay up in the States. Bob, in your particular case, you're coming in at around a fifth to a sixth of U.S. costs. All right. As an oddball commentary, I have to mention that most of the emails I'm getting these days don't have the A word in them anymore. That would be awesome. Everyone knows, who's been listening to my show a long time, that I just don't like that word at all and don't use it myself. Except maybe if I'm mocking somebody. I mean, look, awesome to me is not awesome anymore. When you got 4-year-old kids saying it and 95-year-old grandma saying it, I mean, what's so awesome in the life of a 4-year-old and a grandma 95 years old, she's seen everything, so what's awesome in her life? Who knows, maybe at 95, regular bowel movement is awesome, but hey, when the whole world's stuck on a filler word like that, man, count me out. And thank God it's fading out of the vernacular. In fact, a lot of people would write me emails and stick that word in there just to get me going. So what's going to replace the A word? I don't know, but I hope it's something less irritating on a lot of levels. But you can count on the fact that the new moronic fill word's going to come out of Hollywood from some airhead idiot like the Kardashians or Justin Bieber. And to tell you the truth, I'm not looking forward to it. I think they ought to bring back words like swell. Oh, and one last thing. If a UFO were to land in your backyard, now that would be friggin' awesome. But I can tell you, not much else. Because as stated in the Bible, remember what old Solomon said, there's nothing new under the sun. So what am I doing quoting the Bible? Well, I went to Catholic school, so I had to read the thing 3 or 4 times. Oh, and on my own, I read the Quran, too. Did you ever take a peek at that thing? I'll tell you, ladies, you should especially be pissed. It says, the word of two women is equal to the word of one man. How do you like them apples? Go ahead, check it out. But I digress. Man, did I digress. Oh, and here's an update on one of the topics from the last show. The ongoing epidemic of chicken bus crashes. I think you'll find this update quite interesting. Colombian news sources are reporting that the driver of the bus that crashed Tuesday morning, killing 23 and injuring 22, had a fake driver's license. Surprise, surprise. The 28-year-old driver, identified as Christian Andres P., was treated and released and currently being detained by Ecuadorian tourist police. Remember, that accident occurred in Ecuador. Then it says, according to Blue Radio Colombia, the license found amongst the driver's belongings was not on record with the Cali Colombia Transportation Authority, where it was supposed to have been issued. The director of the authority confirmed that the license had been forged. According to the data on the license, it was issued just last month. On further investigation, it was found that he had unpaid traffic fines in Colombia of $328 and had previously been found guilty of providing illegal transportation services in Cali, Colombia. And this makes me laugh. It says, in addition to the accident scene investigation, an inquiry is underway to determine how the Colombian bus and Colombian national was allowed to enter Ecuador. According to police, the bus was not registered to operate in Ecuador and was even missing its back license plates. Bribery is suspected, it says. You think? Then it says, on Wednesday, a statement from President Lenin Moreno of Ecuador ordered the firing of those responsible for allowing the bus to cross the border. Good luck with that. Then we have this little bit of news that's going around Ecuador, but you'll never read it outside the country. It says, Ecuadorian newspapers report that all the passengers on that bus were given totally free two-week vacations in Ecuador, including transportation costs. And there are reports that along the way, they picked up approximately six Venezuelans and offered them free transportation as well to Ecuador. Why? Because the plan was to camouflage a drug run as a tourist bus. In fact, there were 60 kilos of cocaine found stashed in that bus. But as this is Latin America, certainly there were probably more than 100 kilos stashed and only 60 reported by the police. Business as usual. You get it? Not like those things don't happen up in the States, but... Yep, those are the lovely secondary effects of that failed drug war that was lost 30 years ago. All right, speaking of chicken bus drivers, on that subject we have a comment from a gringo. He says he has an Ecuadorian relative visiting who said he could go to a driving school where they'd charge him $1,000 and he'd get a certificate that would let him get a commercial driver's license that would allow him to legally drive any rig, even the biggest of them, in Ecuador. And the gringo says his relative had zero interest in actually learning the skills necessary to drive a big rig and seemed to know nothing about air brakes, tire loading, speed around curves, etc. But it does go a long way to explain why Latin American truck drivers are such dickheads. Now, as for me, I'm Johnny talking again. I'm kind of doubting the part of that story where you pay $1,000 to buy a commercial license without taking any training or a test. Because I know for a fact, elsewhere in Latin America, way off the gringo tourist trail, that is, you could go to a driver's school, pay $100, and be absolutely guaranteed a driver's license whether you take the class or not. And I know places where $100 will get you a commercial truck driver's license, too. So according to that gringo's testimony about his Ecuadorian relative, to pay $1,000 to get yourself a commercial driver's license sounds like he doesn't know the right people and is getting ripped. That's 10 times the going rate, you know. Besides that, where's the average Ecuadorian to get $1,000 cash?
You've been listening to the Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, you can schedule a one-on-one phone call with me. But first, download my free Plan B questionnaire at www.thenewexpat.com. Better yet, if you want to get your Plan B going from right up there in the States, just sign up for my 9-hour Expat Essentials course. Get the perfect Plan B blueprint by going to theexpatfiles.com/academy.